it's really hard for us to understand, and I think a lot of us, we hear things about slavery, even modern day slavery, and it goes a bit unheard because we just don't understand how bad someone can be treated in that kind of situation. Here's Joseph. He was his father's favourite son. It seems like he was treated better than the other sons. At least he's given this special coat. He gets this position in his brother's eyes, his father elevates him. So he's getting this special treatment, and now suddenly that's all been stripped away and he's been put into slavery. On that road to Egypt, we can imagine some of the things that maybe Joseph is thinking about his life. I mean, it's a long trip there, and I don't know, if you think about your life and some of the things that you look forward to, depending on where you're at in your life, but some of the things you might be hoping for, things you're looking forward to, you might be thinking about what you're going to study at uni. You might be thinking about that, and you've got this free choice that we have in our world here to think about what career path are you going to pick. And you can think about that, you can explore that. You might be thinking, you might be at uni and you're thinking, what job am I going to be in? And you know, who am I going to be paired up with in life? Am I going to get married? Who am I going to marry? And there's things in our future that you may not even be thinking about them yet, but things that might be down the track about children, things about where you're going to live, things about... there's things in life, we have these hopes. All of that has been stripped away from Joseph. He is in slavery. As far as he knows, he will never be married. As far as he knows, he will never have a choice in what job he's going to do. He doesn't know if his master is going to be kind or mean to him. He doesn't know where he's going to live. He doesn't know if he's going to have a good life. As far as he's concerned, he sees no opportunities to kind of get better. He's now in slavery. It's all been stripped away. There's a huge temptation there for Joseph to be angry at God. There's a huge temptation there for Joseph to just give up on it all and to say, I've just had enough. I'm just going to try to get through life. I just stay alive. That there's nothing more for me. He's gone to a distant land. I looked it up. The distance between Canaan and Egypt is similar to here, from here to Brisbane. And they don't have cars or planes. He's got a distance there. He's probably not able to speak any language that people understand in Egypt, or he can't understand them. He doesn't have contact at all with his family. As far as he's concerned, he's never going to see his father again. We can see this immediate question that comes to us as we read this story. What is Joseph going to do with this? But the passage starts very clearly. God is faithful. Start of chapter 39, we see there in verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph and he prospered. Straight away we see that God hasn't left Joseph. Even though he's away from his family, he's away from his loved ones, he's in this strange land, God is with him. And the story ends in this chapter the same way. Right there at verse 23 at the end, almost the exact same story as the start. The Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. God is there. The question never comes up in the story, where is God? God is there. We're unpacking a little bit of how Joseph is going to respond, how Joseph is going to be faithful to God. And the answer we see quite clear in this story is Joseph is faithful. He's faithful towards God and he keeps serving him. We see that he's faithful in tasks. He's faithful in jobs that he's given. A little bit is wrapped up in this same section about God being with him and giving him success. There when it's saying that God gave him success, that the assumption is that Joseph hasn't gotten success just by sitting on his butt doing nothing. He has to have done things that he was asked to do in order for him to be successful. So we can clearly see Joseph is being proactive in life. He's not just given up. He's there. He's trying to do the best that he can with the things. He's doing things. And we know that he gets noticed by his master for doing these things. So we can't even know, it doesn't tell us what he's doing, but he's doing something that is notable. I don't think that Potiphar makes him, elevates his position because he's an incredible guy at sweeping the floors. Right? I can't imagine Potiphar walks into a room and just goes, man, these floors are so clean, this guy, God just must be with him in everything he does. Because that's what we see that Potiphar sees. Potiphar sees that God's in him, with him. So Joseph is doing these things, and Potiphar starts to notice that God is with Joseph. He's being successful. It gives us some perspective, I think, on our lives as we think about things that we do in life and maybe how well we seek to do things. Here's a guy who's in slavery. Now, you could easily see him, I mean, aside, one of the big motivators for him could be fear. He's just working because he's scared. But it seems more than that, because he's excelling in what he's doing. And when we think about our own lives and think about things we're doing and what motivates us and how well do we seek to do things, he's in slavery and he's excelling. We're in positions where we're not even in slavery, and sometimes we just can't be bothered to work hard for God. Colossians 3:23 says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as though you're working for the Lord and not for men. The Bible makes it clear that something we should be doing is in everything glorifying God by doing our best at it. And that's what Joseph is doing there in slavery. And then sometimes for us, in our lives, we're not even willing to do that. And we're not even in slavery. I mean, some of you, you know, if you're in school, there's some similarities there. And some of you, maybe you think, well, my boss is a bit of a slave driver. But it's really not the same thing. No matter how hard your work is, at the end of the day, you can quit your job. Joseph couldn't quit his job. At the end of the day, we have laws that clearly protect you from being treated a certain way in your workplace. Now, Joseph wasn't in the situation to have the same protection. So the question for us is, how are we working for God in the places that we're at? When we're at school or when we're at uni, are we seeking to do the best we can? Or are we just trying to, you know, have fun, have a good time? In fact, one of the things I was thinking about in school, a great opportunity to serve God is often in relationships. How we treat people, especially in school. There's so much about in school that hangs on relationships and how people are treated. And we have an opportunity, if you're at school, you have an opportunity to reach out and care for people that might need that. Be friends to people who might need friendship. A way of loving people and showing God's love to them. At work, we have opportunities in how we conduct ourselves and how we live for God. And are we honest in our work? Or are we just, you know, trying to get away with doing the least we can and not be noticed? Are we honest with possessions at work? Are we honest with our customers, with our clients, with our boss, with our colleagues? I heard another preacher talking about this same idea and just made the point that in our world there's leaders in our workplaces, employers, execs, that sort of thing, who are seeking people to invest in. Right, if you're in a leadership position and you've got a lot on your shoulders and you've got a lot of responsibility, there's people you want to trust to hand things over. It should be Christians, should be those kind of trustworthy people. Christians, we'd like to think we're people who are seeking to be honest, seeking not to lie, seeking to be trustworthy. And so there's that, we would expect to be trustworthy people in our workplace. We'd want to be recognized as a people who others see that we're trustworthy. In fact, one of the things we're going to see in this story is how much God uses Joseph in his roles that he's placed in, roles that he has no choice in, positions that he has no choice in where he ends up. He didn't choose to be in slavery. He doesn't choose to be in prison at the end of the story. But we see in this story, and we're going to continue to see how much God is using him, how much God can use lowly positions, how much God can use us when we're faithful in small things. Here's a guy who's just been a faithful slave. And then next, he's in prison. He doesn't even have a job in prison. And yet we still see that he gains respect and he becomes faithful in the tasks he's given in prison. And we see that God uses him. In fact, we're going to see how hugely God uses Joseph in his life. We see that not only is Joseph blessed by this, but people around him is blessed. The passage tells us that Potiphar, in verse 5, Potiphar is blessed because of Joseph. God is using Joseph not just for Joseph's sake, but for the people around him. When Joseph is faithful, blessing pours onto other people. Now, Joseph isn't a preacher. We don't hear him telling Potiphar about the God he follows. We don't hear him talking about Jesus. We just see this guy who is being faithful, and the blessings are coming out of him onto other people around him. And we see that Potiphar is blessed. We then see the jailer can think Joseph in charge of things and not have to worry about those things anymore. It's amazing what God can do when his people are faithful with the small things he's given us. I think sometimes we can be in the trap of just thinking, you know, we don't have much to offer God. We don't have much to offer the kingdom. We don't have much money, maybe, to contribute towards things God is asking in our area. We feel like we don't have much time to be able to give to God. Maybe we feel like we don't have much skills or much talents that we can give to God. But it's amazing what God can do with people who are faithful with the small things they've given. Here's a guy who's in slavery. That's how small. He's been given nothing. He owns nothing. And yet God used him. He goes to prison. He has even less. And God still uses him. We need that to be a challenge for our lives, that we need to be faithful with whatever God's given us. And instead of looking at things around us and saying, well, where's God? Why is life so hard? Why is my job so hard? Or why is school so hard? Or why are these other things so hard? Instead of thinking that, we can be thinking about how we've been faithful with where God has placed us in our life. And with Joseph, we see the blessing isn't just... The blessing is on the people around him. Think for a moment, if you were to ask the question for yourself, how can I bless someone else tomorrow? Instead of how can I, you know, not feeling well, not wanting to go to work, how can I get away with a sick day, or how can I gain myself in something? Thinking about how can I bless someone else with my day tomorrow? We want to be faithful in the tasks and the place God has placed us. We want to be faithful in the relationships around us. Now, we see a very significant relationship come up in this story with Potiphar's wife. Once again, we have to understand Joseph's situation a little bit. Joseph is a slave, and this is his master's wife that comes in. She has some authority in the house. This isn't just a normal kind of proposition for him. He's actually a slave under authority. And Potiphar's wife doesn't kind of seduce him. We don't get this story that she tries to kind of convince him and seduce him. She actually commands him to come to bed with her. If you look at the original Hebrew, I'm told it literally says, sex now. That's it, right? She says, right now, sex. Let's go. Like, this is a command from Potiphar's wife. She's not trying to convince him. He's a slave. He's in her house. It's her husband's slave, and she gives him a command. We also got to remember Joseph's situation in relationships. Joseph doesn't have... He's probably looking at the fact that he won't ever have a real relationship like that in his life. He's a slave. He's not likely to have a wife. He's not likely to have a relationship. He's a young guy, wasn't married before he came. And so here's this woman who's commanding him to do something. And there'd be an easy opportunity for him to say, well, I'm a slave and I'm being commanded. And this is just the situation it's in. There's an opportunity here for Joseph to argue his way to allow this to happen. In fact, he's likely to get into more trouble rejecting her than he is accepting it. And we see that happen. But she's in a position of authority and she's commanding him. And so, but Joseph, there's two things Joseph comes up with in rejecting that. The first one is he feels like it's sinning against his master. He says, you are Potiphar's wife. You are my master's wife. I can't do this because of that. But there's another and even more significant thing that Joseph says, and that is this would be a sin against God. Joseph doesn't argue his way out of it. He doesn't try to justify it or come up with a solution, because at the end of the day, he's accountable to God, not to his master's wife and her rules on the house, but he's accountable to God in his decision making. And I think when we think that way, it often can change our own opinions when we're trying to talk ourselves into doing the wrong thing. All right, sometimes we try to talk ourselves into doing the wrong thing. We should be trying to talk ourselves out of it, but we start to justify why we want to do something. We start to say, well, it's okay because I'm a slave and she's my master's wife. That's what he could be saying. We do that in our own life. Instead of trying to talk ourselves out of it, we try to talk ourselves into it. And sometimes it's helpful just to draw a line, remembering that it's God. I'll tell you a good example that I think I see this in is in the struggle with pornography. One of the easiest arguments and the most common arguments is to say, no one is being hurt. Right? These videos, these pictures, they've already been filmed, they've already been taken, and no one is being hurt. But this is not about just about people, this is also about God. And that completely does away with that argument. It's not something that honors God in your life. And it needs to be removed. 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, no temptation has seized you except what is common to man. It's saying that there's no sin that's coming just at you. Because sometimes you can feel like that. Sometimes you can feel like a temptation is just, it's weighing down just on you. You feel like no one around you has it. It's just, this is something I'm struggling with. Well, this passage is saying no. These are struggles that mankind has had. No temptation has seized you except with a common man. But it goes on to say, and God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. And when you are tempted, he'll also provide a way out so you can stand up under it. I remember years ago struggling with this passage because I felt like times when I struggled with temptation and I gave in, I felt like this passage is supposed to be a promise saying, there's not going to be anything beyond what I can bear, but I clearly couldn't bear it because I gave in. But I realized this passage isn't so much a promise as much as it's a warning. Saying if you give in to something, it's not actually because the temptation was too great. It's actually because you gave in. And the second part of it is that there's always a way out. The other thing we try to convince ourselves is there's no other option. There's no better thing I can do. But this passage tells us, no, there is an option. Sometimes the option has come and gone. Sometimes we've already made the decision, and that's half the problem. But there is an option, and when we sin, when we give in, it's actually not because God wasn't faithful, but actually because we didn't choose the right option. And we see that in Joseph's life. He could have argued that there was no option. He could have argued there's no way out. She's my master's wife. I've got to do as I'm told. But he knew there was an option to be faithful to God, even in this tricky situation for him. And we see the consequences for him, but we see that God is still faithful, and we see that things still continue on, and God's plan is unfolding. So we need to be faithful in relationships, and in particular we're thinking about sexual relationships in this story. We want to be faithful to marriage. This isn't just something for married people to think about. I've seen too many TV shows that kind of make this joke that someone who's single sleeps with someone who's married and kind of says it's the married person's sin. They're the one that's cheating. Because I'm single, I haven't made any promises. It's adultery for them, it's not for me. That's not true at all. If you're in a relationship with someone who's married, then you are being unfaithful to marriage itself as well. This isn't someone you should be in a relationship with. You shouldn't be flirting with someone who's married. This isn't just something for married people to keep up. And certainly, as we think about our Christian community, our brothers and sisters who we want to support in marriage, we should be seeking to support their marriages. By the way we treat their spouses, by the way we treat our friends, we should be seeking to support their marriages. We want to be faithful in our relationships. Sometimes supporting our marriages actually means encouraging our friends in their relationship with their spouse. As we think about going into this season of marriages and the people that are getting married are coming up, it can be a struggling time in your life to watch some of your friends get married, because relationships change. And time that you used to be able to spend with people, they've now got someone else to go home to, and there can be a strain on friendships. But I want to encourage you, those of you that might be feeling that way, I want to encourage you that you have a responsibility to support your friends' marriages and in the way they spend time with their spouse. We want to be a community that encourages marriage. And so it can be a painful change for some of us at times of life when we see relationships changing with our friends. But we want to be a community that supports marriage. The challenge for us in this chapter is to be faithful. We want to be faithful to God in everything we're doing. We want to be really careful not to blame our decisions on the life around us. Joseph had such opportunity to do that. He was in such a terrible situation. Time and time again, he finds himself in difficult situations where he could choose to blame the situation and give up, but he doesn't. He's faithful. He serves God, even in the face of these trials. We want to be faithful to the fact that we believe in a God who has a plan that's bigger than us, and even bigger than our lives. And as followers of Jesus, we understand that God is working out a plan for his people that is great. No matter what happens in this life, we want to be faithful to him, because God is going to be faithful to his people in bringing salvation. And so we need to be careful of that question. Where is God? Where's God when these bad things happen? Where's God when life is hard? The Bible's clear. God is faithful. God is there. The question for us is, are we being faithful? Are we being faithful at school, at uni, in our workplace, at home, in our friendships? Are we being faithful to God? Let me pray. Lord, we thank you that you are faithful. We pray, Lord, for us in those times that are difficult, in those times where we might be in danger of blaming life circumstances on giving up serving you. We pray that we remember that you are faithful and you are working out a plan of salvation for your people that lasts into eternity. And we want to be faithful to you. Amen.
Please stand and sing our song, Blessed Be Your Name.